So as I mentioned, today we will continue Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 6, The Liberation of Sarva Bhauma Bhattacharya. And today we will be reciting two verses, verse number 170 from chapter number 6 and verse number 171. So, translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedanta Sutra aims at establishing that the cosmic manifestation has come into being by the transformation of the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. For the further explanation of Parinama Vada, refer to Adi Lila, 7th chapter, verses 121 to 133. I may read those verses because Srila Prabhupada refers to them a bit later after we read text number 171. So text number 171, translation by Srila Prabhupada. The touchstone, after touching iron, produces volumes of gold without being changed. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as the cosmic manifestation by his inconceivable potency. Yet he remains unchanged in his eternal transcendental form. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to the commentary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, the purpose of the Janmadi Asya verse in the Vedanta Sutra is to establish that the cosmic manifestation is the result of the transformation of the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is the master of innumerable eternal energies, which are unlimited. Sometimes these energies are manifested, and sometimes they are not. In any case, all energies are under his control, and therefore he is the original energetic, an abode of all energies. A common brain in the conditioned state cannot conceive of how these inconceivable energies abide in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he exists in his innumerable forms as the master of both spiritual and material energies, and how he is the master of both manifest and potential powers, and how contradictory potencies can abide in him. As long as the living entity is within this material world, in the condition of illusion, he cannot understand the activities of the inconceivable energies of the Lord. Thus, the Lord's energies, though factual, are simply beyond the power of the common brain to understand. When the atheistic philosophers or the Mayavadis, being unable to understand the inconceivable energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, imagine an impersonal void, their imagination is only the counterpart of materialistic thinking. Within the material world, there is nothing inconceivable. High-thinking philosophers and scientists can tackle the material energy, but not being able to understand the spiritual energy, they can simply imagine an inactive state such as the impersonal Brahman. This is simply the negative side of material life. By such imperfect knowledge, the Mayavadi philosophers conclude that the cosmic manifestation is a transformation of the Supreme. Thus, they must necessarily also accept the theory of the illusion of the Supreme Vivartavada. However, if we accept the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, we can understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear within this material world without being touched or contaminated by the three modes of material nature. From the Shastras, we learn that there is a stone or jewel called a touchstone that can transform iron into gold. Although the touchstone turns iron into gold many times, it remains in its original condition. If such a material stone can maintain its inconceivable energy after producing volumes of gold, certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead can remain in his original Satchitananda form after creating the cosmic world. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9.10, he acts only through his different energies, Maya Dakshena Prakriti. Krishna directs the material energy and that potency works in the material world. This is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5.44. Srishti Siddhi Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Reka Jaye Vayasya Bhuvanani Brihati Durga Icha Nurupam Abhiyasya Chachistate Sa Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The Durga Shakti material energy acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the universal creation, maintenance and destruction are also being carried out by the Durga Shakti. Krishna's direction is in the background. The conclusion is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead remains as he is, even though directing his energy, which makes the diverse cosmic manifestation work so wonderfully. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Tadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutan Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Namo Vishnupadaya, Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Hastacha Dishatadine Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So two very, very interesting verses. The Vedanta Sutra aims at establishing that the cosmic manifestation has come into being by the transformation of the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The touchstone, after touching iron, produces volumes of gold without being changed. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as the cosmic manifestation by his inconceivable potency. Yet he remains unchanged in his eternal transcendental form. Srila Prabhupada refers to the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 7. Some context of these verses, it is the conversation between Prakashananda Sarasvati and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada translates Parinamvada as the transformation of the energy of the Lord. Now, because this is such a deep philosophical section and we have a lot to cover, maybe for now I won't go through these verses, but essentially you can see in text number 25 a very similar metaphor that we're reading in this 171. And that is the analogy and the example or the metaphor of the touchstone, touching gold, touching iron to become gold, transforming iron, but at the same time remaining unchanged. And this, in one sense, is the essence of these verses that we are going to discuss today. And as a matter of a quick recap, for those who maybe have not been following this particular chapter, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, had gone to Jagannath Puri. Upon seeing Lord Jagannath, he went into ecstatic trance and fell down on the ground, completely unconscious and apparently dead. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being the head, one of the heads of the Jagannath temple, was concerned, took Mahaprabhu home. He was, he found Mahaprabhu as a young sannyasi being very attractive. He inquired about the background of Mahaprabhu, and he found out that he took sannyasi from Keshava Bharati, who was considered to be sort of a lower caste of sannyasi. And Sarvabhauma, thinking out of the goodness of the heart, that this sannyasi, he's young. He may not be very learned in the Vedanta philosophy, and thus he may be facing some dangers in his sannyas ashram. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya felt that he needed to help Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he decided to speak Vedanta philosophy to Mahaprabhu. And for 7 days he spoke Vedanta philosophy, and Mahaprabhu simply listened without any response. And at the end, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a little confused. He said, "Have you understood?" Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, I've understood what you've said." And Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma said, "So why didn't you ask any questions? You know, it is natural in 1 year such philosophy, because it's so complex, that you would have some questions." And Mahaprabhu responded, "Actually, I understand and I recognize Vedanta, but the Vedanta you have been presenting varies and is different from the Vedanta that I am aware of." And then Mahaprabhu starts to speak this beautiful philosophy, this beautiful philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda. And in a previous class, which I gave earlier this month, we discussed what is the essence of Mahaprabhu's philosophy. If we can distill Mahaprabhu's philosophy into one concept, one theme, one main philosophical point, what would that be? And we mentioned that that is the concept of Bhagavan. And Jiva Goswami explains that this is not a simple definition of Bhagavan, as many of us may traditionally know, but this is a very technical definition of Bhagavan. And the essence of Bhagavan is that his main attribute is that he has potencies. He has capabilities. He has capacities. And if we can prove that someone has capacities, the capacity to walk, the capacity to talk, the capacity to sing, the capacity to love, if one has multifarious capacities, then he is a person. He is a person. So Mahaprabhu, in these previous verses, you can see the emphasis on potencies. The emphasis on potencies, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as so beautifully explained by Srila Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas, If we can prove that the Absolute has potencies, then we have Bhagavan. We have a person. And we can see even in these two verses that we've read today, even in the purports of Srila Prabhupada, this word potencies has appeared a number of times. So that is the first point, and that is the point of Bhagavan. Now, these two verses that we are discussing today, they focus on a very particular, a very important, and a very central aspect of the debate between the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas. And maybe I'll spend a little time today to give some focus on this particular very important central aspect of this debate. But before that, let's discuss a bit about Vedanta, because what we're going to discuss today has a very important context. In Vedanta, we actually find the answers to the essential questions in life. And essentially, there are four questions. And those are, what is the nature of ultimate reality? Who are we? What is our nature? What is the world? And what is the nature of the world? And how do we achieve liberation from the world? So the key concern of Vedanta philosophy is to answer these questions. And obviously, the Vedanta, when we speak, mainly we refer to the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Vedanta Sutra, also known as the Brahma Sutra. So the purpose of the different acharyas is to analyze the Vedic literatures and provide answers to this. But there is one problem in the Vedic literature. And Srila Prabhupada refers to this in his purport when he talks about the contradictions. Because if we were to study and if we were just to look at the Vedic literature with the specific aim of answering these questions, we will find so many opposing and contradictory statements in relation to the above questions that it becomes quite difficult to reconcile. And many of us, and most of us who have studied the Vedic literature, we can see through our readings that these contradictions, they appear quite often. And the question is, how does one reconcile these contradictions? So each acharya, each great acharya, the essence of these acharyas' presentation is that they present a philosophy, a specific philosophy, which will reconcile the contradictions. And in these contradictions, we find two primary contradictions. And they are, the first contradiction is, what is the nature of God? Is he personal or is he impersonal? And we know, you know, in the Vedic literatures, there are so many statements. Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. That would give a certain understanding. Then there's statements that say, he has feet, but he does not walk. He does not talk. He is nirguna. He is without qualities, and so on. So there are, we can find, if we analyze, there are many contradictory statements. For the purpose of today's class, it'll take quite a bit of time. I won't focus on the first contradiction. But it's safe to say, for what we discussed previously in Mahaprabhu's central concept of Bhagavan, it will become clear that God is a person. And there are many other aspects of the philosophy that's described by Jiva Goswami, but I won't get into that. These verses that we are studying today focuses on the second contradiction. what is the relationship between God and the material world and the living entities within the material world? Now, the second contradiction has been very nicely explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and further elaborated by Srila Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas. Now, at this point, I have to admit, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. I have not studied the Sandarbhas in any great depth or detail. But I have tried to study some various devotees' presentations, like the likes of Radhika Raman Prabhu, Bhanu Swami, and Gopi Pranadan Prabhu's presentations on the Sandarbhas. So I will try to share, especially in our philosophy, how this second contradiction gets addressed, and it will give, you know, shed greater light on the verses and the purports that we are studying today. On the second point, why is it a problem? Why is it a contradiction? And the answer is, that question is quite simple. So when we speak about Brahman or the Absolute, that Absolute has some fundamental qualities or attributes. And those are Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Sat means it is eternal. Chit means it is fully cognizant and conscious. And Ananda, it is always blissful. Now, if we look at the material world and we analyze the material world, what is the nature of the material world? The nature of the material world is it is asat, it is temporary, it is achit, it is full of ignorance, and finally it is nir ananda. It means there is no bliss here. So the problem we face is, how do we explain our temporary, miserable world comes from an eternal, fully conscious, all blissful God, without saying that they are found in God and they come from God? Because we have a problem if we say, you know, asat, achit, nirananda are found in God and come from God. So at this point, I think it is really nice if we just step back and look into Jiva Goswami's presentations in the Sandarbhas of some fundamental point or fundamental aspects of Bhagavan. So Jiva Goswami explains in the Bhagavad Sandarbha that there are two important aspects of Bhagavan. The first aspect is that he's aprakrita, meaning that Bhagavan is fully spiritual, is non-material. And the second aspect is that is swabhavika, meaning that everything that we find, everything is connected to Bhagavan, and everything is inherently his own nature. So on the first point, and Jiva Goswami, you know, gives many quotations and makes many statements to indicate that Bhagavan, he has a spiritual form. He does not have a material form. He is unlike us. We have a body, and then there's the soul within the body. And then everything else is separated from us. But Bhagavan, and just one point in that respect of Bhagavan, at this point in time of Jiva Goswami's presentation, he doesn't make any great effort to indicate that Krishna is Bhagavan. He simply wants to establish the principles of Bhagavan, and once we we evidences that Bhagavan is the ultimate reality, then it's just a matter of proving who that Bhagavan is, and he does so in the Krishna Sandarbha. So the first aspect of Bhagavan is Aprakrita. He's not material, he's completely spiritual. And the second point, Swabhavika. Everything is connected to him. Jiva Goswami, he makes a big effort and repeatedly goes on to prove this point. That Krishna's body is part of his own nature. Krishna's abode is part of his own nature. Krishna's clothing is part of his own nature. Krishna's paraphernalia is part of his own nature. Everything we experience is part of Krishna's own nature. It's spiritual and it's inherent. And Jiva Goswami, he practically, you know, he does this again and again and again and again and again, making this point. And one may ask the question, why does Jiva Goswami make such a great effort, dedicate so much of time to this one specific point? And to appreciate that, we can consider one scenario. Let's consider a scenario that Krishna's dhoti is different from him. So there's two aspects to that. The first aspect is Krishna's dhoti is different from him, and different from him being is it's not spiritual, it's material. So the first problem we encounter is that in the spiritual world, we now have something that is material. It's decaying. It's ignorant. And it's opposite to Satchidananda. And that's something we cannot ever allow the door to open upon. We cannot allow any such aspect to enter into the existence of God. So that's the first point. Now the second point is, suppose we get one thing which relates to Swabhavika, the attribute of Swabhavika. Suppose that we have one thing that is not part of his own nature. Example again, is dhoti. His dhoti is not inherently part of Krishna. It is acquired from a different nature. What is the problem we have there? The problem is we now have two realities. And as we said, if Krishna's dhoti is not Krishna, we now have two realities in the world. Potentially we have two causes and we have a competitor to God. I mean, we can say, you know, the dhoti can't be God, but still potentially from a philosophical point of view, we have a competitor God. We have a second supreme. And this is why we have this philosophy of achintya bheda bheda. Achintya means inconceivable. And when we went through the purport, we can see many times Srila Prabhupada emphasized this point about inconceivable. How we cannot understand. How we cannot reconcile. So achintya bheda bheda means, essentially it means something quite simple. That simultaneously we have two things. For example, we are Krishna and we are not Krishna. This material world is Krishna and it is not Krishna. Both things have to be set together. Because if you lose one, you lose everything. If we say something is not Krishna, potentially we lose everything. So this is a contradiction. And as Prabhupada says in the purport, contradictions, they do not make any sense. They are inconceivable. Therefore, it is called achintya bheda. So this means two statements have to be said together, because logically we cannot reconcile them. It is 100% true that this world is Krishna, and it is 100% true that the world is different from Krishna. And it's therefore it is called inconceivable. And Jiva Goswami goes on to explain from the Vaishnava perspective how we reconcile this. I didn't get time this morning to finish the slides, so probably stop sharing the slides at this point in time. And maybe just speak a bit more about how does Jiva Goswami reconcile this. And just to say that this problem also is just not a problem of Vedic philosophy. This is also a problem in Western philosophy, in that we say there is a God, right? And we say that this God is all powerful, is all merciful, is all compassionate. And yet we have this material world that is miserable, full of pain, and full of problems. So if we say that God is all powerful, then surely he can correct the problems of the material world. And if we say he's all merciful, then he can do the same. But if we experience the world and God doesn't do that, then we have a problem with God. And this, the new atheists, the likes of Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. You see, there's one book written by Christopher Hitchens, which I purchased just to see what it's all about. And the title of the book is God is Not Great. It is a best-selling book, but the title of the book is God is Not Great. And the whole book is all about this particular philosophy. And in Western philosophy, we call this the problem of evil. The problem of evil. So, what do we do? How do we solve this problem? And this is what Jiva Goswami does in his Sandarbhas. And this is what we see coming forth in these two verses by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and only having time, hopefully we'll get to it, they have their own philosophy of how they reconcile this contradiction. And obviously this sits totally against the Vaishnava philosophy. So what is the Vaishnava philosophy, and how do we reconcile this contradiction? So the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, we can consider it like a ladder. Just think about a ladder. And on this ladder, we have different rungs. And as we explained before, the Lord has multifarious potencies. He has multifarious energies. He has his internal energy, the Antaranga Shakti. He has his marginal energy, the Tatastha Shakti. And then he has his external energy, the Bahiranga Shakti. And each one of these energies is the Lord's energy. It is one energy, in one sense it is one Shakti. But it manifests in three different ways. And it manifests in three different ways depending on, for want of a better word, the distance or the level of distance between the Lord and his energy. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, in these previous verses he quotes, and we all know the famous analogy or the metaphor that Srila Prabhupada, who he takes from Srila Jiva Goswami, he uses the metaphor of the sun. So if we look at these three energies of the Lord, the first energy is the internal energy, and that is considered to be like the light within the sun, the orb within the sun. This orb is so closely connected with the sun that there's no way we can say that we are seeing the sun, but we are not seeing the orb. So in the same way, the eternal energy of the Lord is so closely connected to the Lord that we cannot really draw a distinction or put much distance. The only distance, or the only reason we have to put the distance between the internal energy of the Lord and the Lord is for the purpose of Leela. Just like in the introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada explains how one became two. And Prabhupada says the energy and the energetic. And Prabhupada says, can we speak about the energetic without speaking about the energy? No, we can't. Can we speak about the energy without speaking about the energetic? No, we can't. They are so closely connected. So therefore, you know, we, in our Siddhanta, Srimati Radharani, she's as good as Krishna. She's equal to Krishna. So that's the internal energy. So in terms of the analogy of the sun, what is the marginal energy, the tatastha shakti? That is the rays of the sun. And the rays of the sun still has the same quality of the sun, but it is of a different nature, a different quality. It's of a different quality. So that is tatastha shakti. Now, in relation to the analogy of the sun, what is the external energy? We have the orb, we have the sun rays. What is the external energy? It would be nice if we could interact and I could get some feedback from you all, but unfortunately, our circumstances are different. So what is the external energy? Srila Jiva Goswami explains the external energy is the reflection of the sun. So the reflection, it has the same attributes of the sun, but it also misses some key features. Like, if you take a reflection of the sun, the reflection will have light, but the reflection will not have heat. So the reflection, it has the same, it has some of the properties, but not all. And we'll come back again into this particular point about the relationship with the material world. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains the same thing. He talks about the material world being a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, the perverted reflection of the banyan tree. And there's a whole chapter in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna discusses philosophy. But where does the difference come about? Say, suppose, using the analogy of the Bhagavad Gita, there is the sun and there's the lake. So we see, if we look into the water of the lake, we see the reflection of the sun in the lake. Now, what happens if we throw a pebble into the lake? Or if we jump into the lake, what happens? The reflection disappears. The reflections disappear. Now, a common person or an ignorant person, so to speak, he would say, the sun has now been destroyed. The sun has disappeared. But we know that nothing has happened to the sun there. The sun still exists. The sun has not been disturbed. So what we have here is a statement from this analogy that the material world is Krishna. But we have to follow up the statement immediately by saying that it is not Krishna. That if something happens in the material world which causes it to be deformed in any way, then that deformation does not affect the Supreme Lord himself. It does not affect the Supreme Lord himself. I remember once reading or hearing the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada in the early days. One young girl, she asked Srila Prabhupada a question. She said, Swamiji, Krishna is all good. But yet we see that coming out of Krishna is so much of bad. And Prabhupada gave an interesting response. He said, you're a beautiful young girl. You are a good person. But in your body is stool and urine. And if I say in your body is stool and urine, then that makes you a bad person. Does that logically make sense? And then the girl said, no. And Prabhupada said, yes. Same thing. So the relationship between Krishna and his energy is, and this example is being given here, this example of the touchstone. So we have the touchstone. The touchstone touches iron, and the iron becomes gold, in this case something more valuable. But the touchstone does not become affected. The touchstone does not become affected. So all three energies of Krishna, they are both different and non-different from Krishna. The only difference lies in, we make the distinction by the distance that it is away from Krishna. The internal energy of Krishna, it's non-different from Krishna. There's a slight difference because of Leela. The external energy, the distinction is the difference. We are not the material body. Krishna's form is not material. But there are some oneness. It is also some oneness and some similarity, just like in the deity. We say the deity is non-different from Krishna. The deity is same from Krishna in the material world. So there are some similarities and some differences. The marginal energy, we are one in quality, but we are different. The external energy is different in quality, but not in quantity. The external energy is different in quality, but not in quantity. I'm getting mixed up here. The external energy is same quality, but different quantity. And lastly, the internal energy is both similar in quality and quantity. So, I'm just a bit conscious of time now, and I want to quickly touch on, we've explained how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Veda reconciles this, and hopefully by this very quick explanation, there is some grasp of that. But how does the, how do the Mayavadis reconcile this? How do they reconcile this? They do this in a clever but very cunning way. Therefore, we say this Mayavadi philosophy, which was propounded by Sankara, who is an incarnation of Lord Chaitanya, the Sharirāka Bhāṣya, there is a philosophy in the mode of ignorance. So how do they reconcile the problem between the material world and the Lord? In a very sneaky way. They simply make the material world disappear. It doesn't exist. It's an illusion. And there are two famous metaphors where Prabhu, sorry, just remind me, how are we doing for time? I'm not sure if I'm leaving enough time for questions.
So Prabhu, last final cut will be 8:40, so you have around 5 more minutes maybe, then we can open up for questions, if that's okay with you.
Oh, okay, all right. So there's two famous metaphors. And the first one is the metaphor of the snake and the rope. And the metaphor there is, say suppose you open your door in the middle of the night one day and you want to go out, and as you go out, you see there's a big snake lying in the porch. And immediately you become spooked, terrified, and you run back indoors and you shut the door. I'm not sure about you, but one of my big fears is snakes. So next morning, you open the door and you look there to see if the snake is still there. And what do you see? You see the snake. There's no snake there, but there's simply a rope. There's simply a rope. And what Shankaracharya does, he uses this philosophy of superimposition. So he says this material world is simply a superimposition. It doesn't exist. And then he recalls, he says, so if we look at the example of the snake and the rope, so is the snake real? If someone asks you the question in terms of this experience, is the snake real? And secondly, is the rope real? So one person may say, actually, the snake was not real, because there was no real snake, there was just a rope. And then if we look at it from an objective point of view, was the rope real? Or was there really a snake? And he says, in your mind, there was a snake. And he said, you cannot conjure something up that does not exist. So in this way, again, because of in interest of time, we can discuss this metaphor in a long way. Shankaracharya, he comes up with this philosophy of superimposition. It basically says that in the conditioned state, we superimpose this material world. But in reality, there is no material world. It is just everything is Brahman. And then the second example he gives is the example of the pot. There's a pot, and the pot is surrounded by the sky and air, right? And then if you look in the pot, which is an empty pot, what do you see in the pot? You see sky and you see air, but it's only been formed by the shape of the pot. But if you crack the pot and you break the pot, then what do you have? All that you have is Brahman. All that you have is Brahman. So what he's saying is the only reality is Brahman. And everything else is illusion. But we know that this philosophy is seriously flawed. And Jiva Goswami presents some very brilliant examples in his Sandarbhas, or what's the flaw in this philosophy. But I'll just touch on three of those flaws. So the first point is, we see a rope and we think it's a snake. So we see the material world and we think it's a reality, but in actuality, there is no snake. So everything is Brahman. So Jiva Goswami explains, and he takes us from Sri Ramanuja Acharya's commentary. So for us to conceive of a snake, there has to be a snake. Isn't that so? If there is no snake, then how can we conceive of it? It's not possible. So the first thing he says is, what is your confusion about? For you to say that there is, for us to speak about a material world, there has to be a material world. If there's no material world, then what's the confusion? And the second point he makes is the one about similarity, about the snake. And he says that, you know, we can't make a similarity between a snake and an apple, because there's no similarities between a snake and an apple. But what is the similarity between the world and Brahman? Can you draw any similarities between Brahman and the world? Because we know by nature that the Brahman is Sachidananda, and Brahman is Asit, Achit, and Nirananda. So how can you draw these similarities? This is no similarities. But then the last point he makes, which is the nail in the coffin against the Mayavadis. And this is the point about who is seeing the snake, or who is seeing the rope. Who is seeing the rope and thinking that it is a snake? This is a very fundamental point. If you say everything is Brahman, then it can only be Brahman that mistook the rope for a snake. And this would mean that there is a flaw in Brahman. Brahman can come under illusion. Brahman can come under illusion. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, all of these points that Srila Jiva Goswami makes, Srila Prabhupada makes in his purports, in Bhagavad Gita, in his Srimad Bhagavatam, everywhere. Srila Prabhupada has explained this philosophy of Jiva Goswami in a very simple way. So in this way we can see that really the Mayavadis, and therefore Srila Prabhupada just hammers them in this purport, completely hammers them, that they are just coming up with word jugglery. There is no logic. There is no logic to it. But the Vaishnava Siddhanta, of simultaneously one and different, we can find a sensible, logical reconciliation in the contradictions in this philosophy. So I'll stop here. I think it's 8:35 now. We should leave some time for questions. I'm not sure if anyone's got any questions.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. This was a class packed with philosophy, as we expected from you. Very nice. Thank you so much. You went into the whole details of this debate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya are having, and especially focused on the differences between Mayavad and Achintya Bheda philosophy. So for now, we don't have any questions in the chat. So I would just like to ask you this question that has been bothering me for quite some time, because in some way we can say, yeah, obviously, Chintya Bheda is a perfect solution for everything, but at the same time, it makes things seem very relative also. Somebody from outside could say, yeah, this is just, you know, you covering up that you don't know anything, basically. So what would you say to such a person?
It's a very interesting point you make, and because of time constraints, I didn't explain it, but Jiva Goswami explains it again in terms of the metaphor of Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, and how you can see it as a ladder, and how you can reconcile the ladder by either dropping the ladder and expanding the ladder, and how statements about Brahman, we can take the statements about Brahman to mean Bhagavan if you go up the ladder, and how statements about Bhagavan in relation to Brahman, you can reconcile it by dropping down. But someone may say, as you've rightly said, Prabhu, but someone may say that this is all cheating. We're just coming up with a very, fancy form of words. It's more or less cheating. But, I was listening to a class by Radhika Raman Prabhu. He said, by collapsing the ladder and making the ladder go up between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, you demonstrate that everything can be reconciled. But that seems cheating. But Radhika Raman Prabhu makes the point that actually this is no different from any other philosopher. This is not changing a philosophy. These commentaries by the acharyas, they are simply coming up with a method to reconcile the differences. I really like what Radhika Raman Prabhu recently said. He said, where is it better to be confused? Is it better to be confused around the nature of God? Or is it better to be confused about the world around us? The Mayavadis, they make the confusion, so to speak, about the world around us. And the philosophy of Achinta Bheda Bheda, which is inconceivable, they say the confusion is about the nature of God. And this confusion, actually, if you analyze it, it is both acceptable, it is necessary, and it is beautiful. If we were to be in a position where we could figure out everything, then we would be God, isn't it? So we need to allow ourselves a space where we have to accept that certain things are inconceivable. Certain things are beyond our comprehension. And that is not necessarily a bad thing. It is both beautiful, necessarily, and it's acceptable, because this is the impetus for bhakti. That here we have a supreme absolute truth that is inconceivable. But yet, through the process of devotion, he can reveal himself as he chooses. And on the other side, the side of the Mayavadis, which is totally confusing, totally, you cannot understand it, which reduces us and God to an equal level. So the better space to be is to accept that certain things are inconceivable, it's beyond our comprehension, and that is not necessarily a bad thing. So if someone wants to challenge us in that respect, we say, we've got a logical system for reconciliation, but that's not a bad thing. Does that make sense to you, Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu, beautiful. As you said, I think the main thing is to accept actually that it is inconceivable, right? In the end, that's just a reality and we have to come to terms with it and therefore be actually inspired and take it as a means to increase our bhakti.
Yes. And although it's inconceivable, it's a beautiful system of philosophy which reconciles these apparent contradictions in the Vedanta philosophy. Okay, there's any other questions, Prabhu? If there's not, then...
It doesn't look like it, Prabhu. And I also think with these ending words, we can call it a day here, and I think we have enough to reflect upon and be inspired to go deeper and find these inconceivable things in Krishna and let him reveal it to us by, yeah, diving deep into our sadhana, especially on this glorious Ekadashi.
Yeah. Can I take the liberty of making one announcement, Prabhu?
Of course, Prabhu, please.
Yes, as many of you all know, one of my main services is the Gomatsya Project, where we try to distribute sets of Srila Prabhupada's books, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. This year, being a very special year, the 125th appearance anniversary of Srila Prabhupada, we want to make a special offering to Srila Prabhupada. Worldwide, we want to distribute 25,000 sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's a special offering. The European contribution towards this target is 1,000. Bhaktivedanta Manor's contribution will be a minimum of 400,000. I mean, not 400,000, honestly, 400,000. 400 sets. And what we said, we always had this philosophy in Bhaktivedanta Manor that a little from more. We don't rely on a few devotees trying to achieve a lot. We try to engage everyone in the community to do a little. So we want to appeal and reach out to all the devotees in the community, and especially those that are online today. We want to find 400 devotees or appeal to 400 devotees to come forward for this Bhadra campaign, for this goal of 25,000 sets for Srila Prabhupada, to make a commitment over the next 4 months to either distribute, sponsor, or gift one set of Srimad Bhagavatam. And if anyone would like to become part of this wonderful effort to please Srila Prabhupada, please contact me. My email address is vrindavanchandra@krishnatemple.com. So I'd like to end by offering my humble obeisances to all the Vaishnava devotees. Please forgive me if I made any errors or any mistakes. Any offenses in what I said. Vancha kalpa turuvyasya kripa sindhubhyevacha patita nam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Anantakodi vaishnavrindiki jai. Hila mahupadiki jai. Vodhikimanandi.